Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's good? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, May 31st, 2022. I'm your host, Jan Garcia, and joining me is Gary Whitta for the first time in KFGD history.
I think is this the last remaining combo? This might be the last one. I've collected all the Pokemons now.
That's a good question.
This is the last one. Barrett, who haven't I hosted with? Is there anyone left?
Cool.
This has got to be it, right?
I mean,
it depends on how.
Yeah, you've done.
You've done
an XCast day with Mike. You know, you're usually here with Greg. You've definitely done it with Tim.
Tim.
Yeah, have you done with one with Andy?
No, I haven't. But now you mention it, that sounds like a very.
That sounds like
very
a fun
enticing
show.
Prospect. Yeah, I feel like we'd be good together.
So you still have one host left, Gary, and then you know you've completed
I thought I'd got. It's like an Animal Crossing where I thought I had every fossil and there was one left that I didn't have. It's gonna drive me crazy now until I get it. All right, we'll have to make that work. I'll talk to Andy. We'll make it work.
It's not as bad as missing those paintings. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm gonna dedicate my whole life to this thing. Yeah, I think I'm missing. Tam. If we're throwing Tam in there, I think that's the only person
that would be a good combo too.
Yeah,
we got to cross off the last remaining combos.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, making history today. Also, you joined TikTok today, or at least announced it today.
I've been on TikTok for a while. For what reason, I don't know. I was worried about joining TikTok because I'm almost 50 years old. I felt like if I joined TikTok, they might put me on some sort of register. I don't know. But my kid's on it. And she uses it primarily as a messaging app, but she's also addicted to TikToks now. She looks up like kid-friendly TikToks. She's into all kinds of really interesting, like kind of art TikTok. There's actually all kinds of amazing stuff on TikTok. I think I may have underestimated it. When I think of TikTok, I only think of like the stuff that kind of bubbles to the surface and goes viral, which is usually like very kind of, you know, whatever. But there's actually some really interesting stuff on there that my kids introduced me to. So. Yeah, I'm on TikTok, and if you want to follow me on TikTok, I mean, I doubt I'll post anything, but if you want to, I'm just Gary Whitta on TikTok.
Yeah, so you're not sure if you're going to post? You should post.
I don't know. What would I do on it? Something. I mean, what do people do on it? What would I do?
Literally just hit record, you know?
I can't dance.
I mean, I feel like there's a million questions people would love to ask you about, like, all the projects you've done, like, where you get ideas from, how you got started in the industry. Yeah, like, I feel like... it would be a well of content, even just going on there and saying, hey, here's who I am. Let me know if you have any questions. I feel like
what is the limit to the length of a video that you can post on TikTok? Is it like a thing where they have to be really short?
Right now, the common limit is 3 minutes. I think some people are getting even longer versions as well. But it's like you can do 15 seconds, 60 seconds or 3 minutes.
Okay, yeah, because the ones that I see are the ones where they keep it short, where like they manage to set up the gag and do it like real fast. Because you want to just like swipe through them and get the gag quickly. People have such short attention spans these days. Yeah. I remember when we crossed some kind of barrier some years ago when people said like, watch my 10-minute video, and people were like, 10 minutes. And then Vine didn't last very long, but when Vine got it down to 6 seconds, I'm like, this is it, like. Are we saying now that 6 seconds is all we can deal with? And I'm actually glad that never survived, because I thought, come on, surely we can do better than that. I'm as bad as anyone else, though. Like, I can't anything more than like a couple of minutes. I'm like, oh, really? You know?
Yeah, I have that problem really bad with movies. I'm like, how long is it? I'm above 2 hours. Like, but then I'll watch like 8 hours of a sitcom that I've seen a million times over. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of cool stuff popping up on there. I do like they have the multiple like time formats, and yeah, I mean, it's really whatever you want to make it to be, but I feel like I see a bunch of, you know, kind of like you were mentioning, like with your kid looking up TikToks, like there's so many different ways to do content there that it like can really just be whatever you want. So
I see a lot of these like these,
well, I followed
these...
you on there, so we'll see.
Okay, well, that's good. Now I have to create something. I thought it was just like girls doing dances and stuff, but there's a lot of good comedy. I think TikTok is a really good venue for people to do comedy, again, like short form comedy. You can like set up a gag and do it in like 15 or 30 seconds. I've seen like TikTok magic. There's some cool stuff on there. I should definitely investigate.
Chat's telling you to do like writing tips. There's like definitely like a writing corner of TikTok, Gary.
Well, I heard that book TikTok is very popular.
Oh yeah, book.
But there's
talk,
like
yeah.
this kind of like this informal. There was a whole thing recently where the publishing industry was trying to figure out why certain books, including like older books that have been out for a while, were suddenly becoming bestsellers. And it was because that just like organically, the TikTok book community decided that this was like, it's not like Oprah's book club where like Oprah says this is going to be the next big book. It's just like this organic thing happens where lots of TikTokers just kind of crowdsource, decide this is the next book that we're into. And then these books start shooting up the charts. So now the publishing industry is trying to figure out like how to game book TikTok and make their next book a big hit. So I have a book coming out later this year. So maybe I should start figuring this stuff out.
Yeah. You know, get in now. The second best time is now, right? The best time would be before, like yesterday.
Yeah.
Second best time is now. You
yeah,
know?
There's so much of my life is summed up that way. Like the best time to do something would have been ages ago. And I'm just now figuring it out.
Yeah, you've done a lot, but I feel that there's always more. There always feels like there's more to be done. And speaking of more, we got a bunch more news for y'all, because today's stories include PlayStation joining Summer Game Fest, Hashimoto announcing retirement from Square Enix, June's Game Pass games, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you're wrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Use Epic creator code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support Kinda Funny. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free, along with the exclusive daily post show. Some housekeeping for you. Every Kinda Funny Wrestling Championship is on the line today. Yes, KFW Memorial Day Brawl pops off after this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily. Come see if Joey Noel can knock off a lot of Pierce and become the Kind of Funny Twitch champion. If you miss it live, it'll be up ASAP on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. A thank you to our Patreon producers, Anonymous and Fargo Brady. Today we're brought to you by Chime and Credit Karma, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories here today.
A baker's dozen.
And I want to kick it off with PlayStation joining Summer Game Fest. This is kind of building on a conversation that was started on Friday's episode of KFGD when we found out that PlayStation was doing a state of play at all. But now we know that it's officially like branded as Summer Game Fest. I actually saw this from Nebellion's Twitter, where they had posted up PlayStation's like promotional, and it had like the little kind of watermark logo in the corner saying Summer Game Fest. And it's like, oh, I guess this is now part of it. So I want to kind of unpack that and talk about it. A bunch of angles we can take it from. First, I want to kind of lay the scene for what is Summer Game Fest, because I feel like even in those conversations, there's been like, oh, it's E3, but you know, not E3, like there's a bunch of stuff happening, but what's all a part of it? According to Summer Game Fest's official website, their upcoming events are listed as June 2nd, PlayStation State of Play, June 9th, Summer Game Fest, June 10th, Netflix Geeked Week Gaming, June 10th as well, Tribeca Game Spotlight, and June 12th, Xbox and Bethesda Showcase. We also saw a tweet recently from Keeley where he was mentioning that there are, you know, 30 partners and more to be announced, a bunch of different activities, kind of posted up a little graphic of some of those partners, you know, folks like 2K, Activision, Bloober, Capcom, Netflix, PlayStation, you know, the list goes on. We're supposed to hear more. And then we also have a tweet from Greg where he announced that him, Tim, Bless are going to LA to play some games during Summer Games Fest Play Days, which is going to be a media only preview event that's happening. So that's kind of what we currently know of what Summer Game Fest is. So I want to start off by asking you, Gary, does now knowing that PlayStation State of Play is branded as a Summer Game Fest event, does that change your expectations? Does it increase, decrease them, keep them the same? Where are you at with that kind of branding that we now know about?
It doesn't change my expectations of what we'd be seeing. I think, you know, whatever sticker they put on the front, you know, the contents of the box, you know, what's inside the box, I don't think are gonna change. I do think it is interesting in terms of just like, well, what's going to be replaced? Is E3 really gone? And is this the new E3? Has Jeff Keighley now just kind of consumed E3 and it's now going to be all Keighley all the time in the summer? It kind of seems that way, right? If an event as big as State of Play, which has always, you know, been kind of an independent Sony event, and I'm sure will continue to be so, but if it's like now kind of falling under the Jeff Keighley umbrella, that kind of feels like another big step towards, you know, the Jeff Keighley, what seems to be the increasingly inevitable domination of the universe by Jeff Keighley. Don't you think? He's taking over. Well, he's unstoppable. What's going to stop him at this point?
Now it sounds scary. I do think that he's kind of uncontested. I feel like we've seen what it's like in the wake of E3 and the stuff that happens outside of like Keighley's Summer Game Fest. And while I think Summer Game Fest has a lot of room for growth, it definitely is like the thing of the summer. Like, there's other stuff happening here and there, but everyone's talking about Summer Game Fest. You know, will it replace E3, etc. I think he has a little while before it has that kind of, I think, cachet to it. But I feel like the foundation is pretty strong. It's just about, I guess, getting the messaging and the conversation skewed in the right direction. Which brings me to my next question. Do you buy into Summer Game Fest's kind of construction of it being this kind of seasonal era with these different like events underneath it? Like, when you see those things, do you associate those things with Summer Game Fest? When you think Xbox, Bethesda, are you like, oh, that's part of SGF? Even, you know, it is officially, but do you kind of have that association with it?
Not yet, but that will depend on how good a job they do of kind of branding it all under this umbrella. If they've got like Keighley doing links between all these events and the Xbox and PlayStation people are saying, thanks, Jeff, we're excited to be part of Summer Game, or if they kind of do it in that way. But again, that to me is all just like, it's bleh. It's all just stuff. Like, to me, it doesn't matter. Like, what are the games? But definitely, I think, you know, I'm old enough to remember like when CES was the thing, but when E3 came along and kind of made this, you know, summer, when E3 started happening in the summer many years ago, and basically over the years, it's created this, it's conditioned us to expect some kind of big game reveal extravaganza in the summer every year. And typically that had been associated with E3. That's when it happened. Now that E3's gone away, it has kind of left a vacuum, right? We still, oh yeah, but where are our summer game reveals? If E3's not going to do it, who will? Well, you know, here comes Jeff Keighley stepping into the breach and others. You know, IGN, I think, typically does some kind of summer games fest thing as well. And so a bunch of people are now summer kind of looking gaming to fill that void. And Jeff definitely seems like he's in pole position, right? He's doing a very good job of putting all these different elements together.
What do you think it'll take for this to be the new wave? And like, do you buy that it even is the new wave? Do you buy that we need a new wave? Do you see E3 coming back? Like, what do you think these next few years of like the summer gaming season looks like?
I don't think E3's coming back anytime soon. Certainly not as a big in-person event. You know, COVID obviously really was the final nail in the coffin for what many people thought had been kind of a moribund enterprise for many years. I've seen E3 die and come back so many times, and I think this might be it, especially if in its absence something else comes in and occupies that space, right? It's gonna and we get to the point where we now associate summer with, you know, Summer Games Fest and Keighley and all these other events. Like, E3 is gonna just start kind of like fading. You know, you had your time, now it's someone else's turn. But again, though, to me, it doesn't really matter how it's branded. I think there will always be, at this point, I think there will always be some kind of big summer games reveal festival. Like, summer's just a good time to do it, right? Because you're like 6 months out from when these games typically, or like 4 or 5 months out from when these games will start hitting, because it's typically like the big holiday game reveals. So there'll always be a market for it. There'll always be an expectation for something in the summer. What form that ends up taking, you know, will take a few years to kind of sort out, as like things will either bed in and settle in and kind of become the expectation going forward or not. But again, I don't think it matters what the branding is, as long as, you know, we get to look at like, you know, bunches of cool new game trailers and reviewers and surprise. I don't really care how the present is wrapped. I just care that we get a present every summer.
Yeah, there's something to open up. What do you think, like, these kind of, I guess, summer events, right? Put in, Summer Game Fest. I'm still getting used to the name, even though it's been like a few years. And like E3, like, what do you think these do for the industry, like for media, for content? Because I think there's also a lot of conversation, both from people in the industry and people outside the industry, kind of asking, like, you know, what's the point? Do we really need a unifying thing? Like, what do you kind of mentioned that it doesn't really matter as long as we get the thing, but then also you need to like plan to make that happen. So like, where do you see, like, what is the impact this has on the industry in general?
I mean, again, I really don't think it makes that much of a difference. Even when it was under the banner of E3, right, they still felt like separate events. Like on one day, Sony would do their big event. The next day, Xbox would do their big event. Ubisoft would do their, and they always felt like separate, you know, discrete events. That, I mean, they fell under the banner of E3, but like, what does that matter? Like, who cares? Like, we just want to see the games. It was a unifying thing that meant that all of these things kind of happened at once. And that was cool, because it was like one week where it was like, oh my God, there's so much stuff. Sony today, Xbox tomorrow, Ubisoft the day after that, Activision, Devolver, all this stuff is coming. And we like that it all came at us all at once. And I guess you do need kind of like a unifying umbrella, you know, for that to happen. But like, that pattern is established now. And again, if it's not going to be under the banner of E3, it's going to be under the Jeff Keighley banner or whatever. It does make me ask the question, Janet, and I want your opinion. I mean, like, let me ask you this. How much Jeff Keighley is too much Jeff Keighley? Does he need to be stopped? Is it getting out of control? Is Jeff Keighley really the answer to all of our problems, as he seems to think he is?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I think we are starting to approach maybe where it's a lot. Like, I think if he gets the fall in, because he has winter. Like, he has winter, he has summer.
He's got, you've already got two seasons left, what are you doing in the summer as well? He wants to get to a point where it's just like, he just dominates the entire calendar. Like, every month we're talking about something that Jeff Keighley is doing.
Yeah, it's like pumpkin cream cold brew, also Jeff Keighley's, you know, fall of autumn. I don't know, right?
Right, you've got the Jeff Keighley peppermint latte in December. Then you've got the pumpkin spice Jeff Keighley in the fall, and then you're like Jeff Keighley Easter egg spring collection. I don't know, but like there's no getting away from the guy.
I could see an Easter egg
saturation point.
Yeah, I think it's getting to be a lot in this. I think one thing that I would like to see, if I had like a magic wand that also didn't destroy the industry, because again, I don't actually know like what it takes to put together these kind of events, so I try to always have things couched in that fact, right? Like, I don't know what it takes to actually put those things together. But what I would really like to see from like Jeff Keighley's content and his position in the industry is for him to begin to decenter himself for a number of reasons. One, I think it is kind of a lot. Two, I think you always need to be looking towards the future. And the reality is, even though like Jeff is, you know, fairly young, and I see him being in the industry for a very long time, clearly he seems to have the passion for it. You know, that's still not forever. You need to kind of, if he really wants to make this, if we take his word, his stuff at face value, right, and he wants to sort of move the industry forward and celebrate games and bring games into the mainstream, then that needs to be bigger than him. Because if not, it just ends when he's done, or when he decides he's done, or when, you know, his life ends, if we want to be morbid with it. And I think especially something like, right? Like, stuff ends.
I was opening the door for you to like kind of rag on Jeff Keighley. And now you're talking about, when is he going to die?
At a certain point, surpassing
my expectations.
It's going to be over. So like, what's next? And if we really, you know, believe what he says, and that it is about moving the industry forward, and isn't just about his ego, as he's often accused of, then I'd like to see some of those things take place. And I'm sure he'd argue that that's why he has like Future Class, but currently I don't really see that as quite like a pipeline to like carrying on the torch of the industry. It's more of like here's a collection of different creators, and maybe trying to do, you know, I think Future Class is generally a good idea, but I don't think that's the end of him trying to leave a larger impact. And really what I want to see more than anything is for him to be decentered for Game Awards, because, you know, like I was having a conversation with my brother about like Jeff and people's perceptions of Jeff. And I was like, yeah, you know, like people kind of feel like he's maybe a little too egotistical, but like, I don't know, it's like his award show, whatever. And he's like, yeah, who's the Grammys? And I'm like, oh, you're fucking right. Like, you know, like, I think if we really want this to be gaming's Grammys, gaming's Oscars, even though there's a whole fuck the Oscars meme, it should be have a little bit more of a neutrality feeling to it, so that it can be more industry focused and isn't just like perceived as Keighley Knight. You know, whether he wants that or doesn't want that, that is the current perception, and I think it'd be worthwhile to kind of step away from it.
I feel like he could go farther if he wanted to, though. Like, he could call the awards the Keighleys and have a little like gold Jeff statuette, so you get a little Jeff person that you get to put on your shelf. Like, he could definitely go further with it.
Those big poster stickers you could put on the wall, the fat heads, where it's like a giant cutout of someone's face.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. So I just want to be clear. Jeff and I have like this fake feud that's been going on for ages. It often leads to me kind of like ragging on. Anytime Jeff comes up, I always find some way to kind of like to make fun of his expense. But I actually think that what he has done overall has been tremendous in terms of raising the profile of games and kind of bringing that kind of, there's an argument of whether or not we really want to try to be emulating that Hollywood glamour. You know, the games industry is every bit as big as Hollywood. We don't need to be like looking up to them. It's not like we're, oh, games, why can't we be more like movies? We don't really want to be more like movies. Trust me, the movie business is fucked up. So we should be just proud of, you know, where we are as a game industry and not looking to emulate anyone. But in terms of raising the profile of gaming and bringing it to the masses and making it feel like we are, you know, because I think many people do have this kind of weird inferiority complex. Well, oh, we're not as legit as movies or television or the Grammys or whatever. I think he's done a good job in kind of making that feel like, no, we can be just as cool as anyone else, and rightly so. And again, in terms of you know, the summer stuff, like I said, someone had to step into that breach, right? E3 is done, and so who's going to bring those summer game reveals to us? Is it going to be a disparate collection of, well, IGN's going to do a thing over here, and GameSpot's going to do something, and Devolver's just going to do its own thing, and you know, it'll just be this kind of thing? It is kind of nice to have like I said, a unifying framework for it, and I think Jeff's obviously decided this is the opportunity to do that, and he's done a good job of it, right? I don't know how long, remember how long Summer Games Fest has been around, but like, it's the format for it has, you know, has at this point kind of calcified, and we expect it now. Like, oh, what's going to be in Summer Games Fest next year? Like, it's become a thing on the calendar. I mean, it's not easy to do that, and so I congratulate Jeff on all the success that he's had in like bringing. It's hard work as well. I can't even imagine how much work it is to like put the game awards together every year, right? I used to do that stupid animal talking show, and it was a full-time job just to do a stupid, you know, talk show on Twitch for 2 hours. But when you're dealing with like a full live event and like orchestras and remotes to different places around the world, logistically, that's an absolute nightmare. So to be able to even like stage something on that scale is just a really impressive, like, you know, amount of effort and planning that goes into that. So I say fair play to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we move on, I do want to comment on something that this is like an old thing, but I like highlighted because I want to get back to it in the chat. Nightlife 2021, all E3 was a vacation spot for game journalists. I could not disagree with that more. Though I will say afterwards, yeah, a lot of people hit Disney World or Land or whatever the fuck is there.
Yeah, but afterwards, though, that's their own time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I worked so, like, me and like everybody that I like was around, like at IGN, other people in like other outlets, like, you know, it is cool because we're all together and like, yeah, you see like the photo. I think it's easy to think that when you see like the photos of the meetups or the bar afterwards, but like what you don't see as much, or I feel like what doesn't get talked about as much, is like the insane amount of work that goes into coverage and interview. And like, you know, I had posted more articles in that small span of a few days than I had in like months. And it's also what I like about it too. Obviously, I'm not in favor of like people just grind themselves into dust, but I think E3 and Summer Game Fest and that kind of era, it brings out an extra energy, I think, from creators and from outlets like of varying sizes. There is like a big unifying, again, conversation point, coverage point, in a way that we don't get any other time of the year. Like, we obviously have like common ground with, you know, big game releases and things like that, but that's really one thing that I really value from, you know, whether it's E3, whether it's Summer Game Fest. It doesn't really, like you said, it doesn't really matter who does it, as long as it's happening and continues to happen. It'll still be sort of that pinnacle thing that people look towards for setting up companies for like the remainder of the year and kind of setting the tone for everything.
See, this is, I've talked about this before, and this is why I think a lot of the conversation in the games media about like, oh, is E3 going away and isn't that a big deal, is a little bit overblown. Because I think, like, you know, many of us who do this kind of stuff, you know, we live in a bit of a media bubble where we experience E3 very differently to the vast majority of people. Like, I worked in the, you know, I was a PC gamer and worked in games journalism for many years. So I remember going to E3 and going to the, you know, the behind the scenes events and the big reveals and the you know, the private demos, and going to the, you know, the bar at the Figueroa Hotel and going out partying to all these glamorous events. Yeah, that was wonderful. And I understand why games journalists who still enjoy that today, oh, I get to go to E3 and see all my friends. If that's going away, I can understand why you might mourn that. But that only really impacts a very, very small subset of privileged kind of media people, like a couple of thousand people. For the vast majority of people out there who, you know, think about E3, the millions and millions of gamers, they're going to continue to experience it the same way that they always have, which is on some kind of live stream, and they'll watch it and they'll come out online and they'll move on. Whether it's the Keighley event or the E3s or IGN or whatever it might be, they're not going to be affected. But I do think there's been a little bit of kind of over amplification of what a big deal the E3 is, because the people that are writing those stories and reporting on it are the people that are going to miss all the fun stuff the most, which is the games journalists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems like that some of that's getting incorporated as well through things like, what is it called, like play days or whatever.
Right.
It'll be interesting, too, to see how that might evolve. Because I know like E3 for a long time was like going to E3, right, was a media only thing. And they eventually did open some of that up to the public. So I'll be curious to see like how Jeff approaches some of those things and like what, like I would, and I'm sure this conversation's out there somewhere because I know Jeff does do interviews sometimes, but like, what he perceives as things he wants to replicate and things he wants to move away from in terms of like what, how he sees this going forward. But yeah, excited to see what it turns out to be. Very glad I don't have to make it, but I get secondhand stress just watching people like Jeff do content, even though we do content all the time, but like it's a different, you know, level. And yeah, so, you know, best of luck to everybody involved in the production side of those things, because it is a lot. Let's move on to our next story. Shinji Hashimoto announced his retirement from Square Enix. This comes from Sean Mori over at The Gamer, who writes, Shinji Hashimoto has officially announced his retirement from Square Enix. The former Final Fantasy brand manager and Square Enix executive officer made the announcement on Twitter earlier today. Good day, everyone. As of today, May 31st, I am leaving my job due to entering retirement age, wrote Hashimoto. I had worked with many people from various fields during my tenure. From here on, I'd like to support Square Enix as a fan. Thank you very much. Hashimoto's retirement comes as no surprise. At last year's Digital Fan Fest, Hashimoto announced he was stepping down as Final Fantasy brand manager and revealed his replacement, Yoshinori Katase. For the past year, Hashimoto has served as a corporate advisor, essentially training his replacement pending his official retirement. For 27 years, Hashimoto has served as producer or executive producer for nearly every Final Fantasy game ever produced, with credits that include the likes of Final Fantasy VII Remake, Nioh: The World Ends With You, all three Kingdom Hearts, which, quick interjection, the phrase all three Kingdom Hearts is just funny to me when there's like a kajillion Kingdom Hearts. But anyway, the Last Remnant. Hashimoto has worked on over 100 games since joining Square Enix back in 1995 when it was still just Squaresoft, and has served as Final Fantasy's brand director for well over a decade. Hashimoto has also been in charge of first production department at Square Enix for as long as it's been around. Enjoy your retirement, Mr. Hashimoto. So yeah, congrats to him on, you know, finishing and seeing through a career and reaching retirement. Again, I don't know why everything's very morbid, or I'm like at the end of days in a lot of my conversation, but well, one, what do you take from this? Are you a Final Fantasy person? And two, Gary, have you thought about retirement and what the end of your career looks like?
Fucking
and how are you
hell,
how are you going out? Are you sending out the tweet? Are you like,
you are, are you this more, I don't know you terribly well, Janet. It's our first time hosting. Are you this morbid all the time? Are you constantly thinking about like death and the end of life? Because I feel like we keep ending up back here.
A little bit, because me and Barrett, on one of the post shows, like that's how I like described, like Bless was like, oh, you're doing this 100 games project. Isn't that going to take forever? Isn't that like a lifetime? And I'm like, yeah, but you know, I need something to do as I like await for the inevitable. And Barrett's like, that's why I do my like video essay.
Well, we were talking about like replaying games. Like, why are you guys replaying shit all the time? It's like, well, this might be the last time, you know, like I get to play one of my favorite games of all time. You never know. You never know.
Yep. You have no idea.
Well, to answer your question, I mean, we joke about it, I'm really not that far off. I'm only 10 years. I'm 10 years away from being able to like claim my, you know, my pension and my retirement. All that stuff kicks in at like 59 and a half. I'm going to be 50 in a couple of months. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's getting there. I've never really, I mean, I have thought about like getting to, you know, it would be nice to just like sit on a beach and not have to work anymore. The nice thing about the kind of work that I do is that I enjoy my work. I like, you know, the whole reason why I do is I like writing. I don't consider it a chore. Sometimes, you know, if it's, we all have days when you don't want to, you know, you just want to blow it off. It doesn't matter what you do for a living. Even when I was working on Star Wars, there were days I still want to do it today. Like, it's just a human thing. But the nice thing about it is I do, it's not like I'll be glad to have to not to work anymore. I'll be glad to not have to work anymore, but the difference is I probably would still continue to work. I probably would still continue to write and have ideas and want to make things, just because like that impulse doesn't go away, you know, when there's no longer any financial imperative to do so. Certainly one of the reasons why I work is I need to earn money to support my family. If I suddenly became like independently wealthy overnight, like let's say I won the lottery tomorrow, I probably would take a year off and like DOS around for a bit. But like, I think creative people, I've seen this before. I've seen other people who got very rich and retired early, said I'm retired, but like a year later, they're back at it. Cause they get bored sitting on a beach. They're like, no, I want to do something. The same creative impulse that led to them becoming successful in the first place doesn't just go away once they become rich. Like it's still there driving them. And so, I mean, look at Ridley Scott. He's like in his 80s and he's still making movies. He makes like 3 movies a year. And so I think that, yeah, I mean, I do like the idea of not having to work anymore, but I think I probably would, I probably will. And it's writing, right? As long as my fingers work and my brain work, I can still, you know, do the thing. And so I like to think I'd be able to, you know, continue working beyond like typical retirement age, but it'd be nice to be able to do it on my own terms and just write things that I want to write just for fun rather than worrying about paying the bills.
Yeah. And I think you totally nailed it where you, a lot of times now in a case like this, I feel like it's, you know, it's been set up for a while. And I could see it either way with like someone like Hashimoto, because really whenever anyone in the industry retires, like there's always a chance that their resources in some form, even if it's something small, right? And you know, it's funny to think of like a book as small because a book is like a huge undertaking, but you know, you see people like do, you know, end up being on boards, end up doing speaking engagements, end up doing books. Like a lot of times people who are into the industry, again, like you said, that doesn't go just vanish overnight, and you may see them kind of service in other ways. But obviously, like, it's always exciting for people to, you know, be able to make that choice for themselves and sort of end their career on their terms. We also know that's a luxury that's not afforded to many people in, you know, in an industry as challenging, I think, as this one, and that it has the turnover that ours does, be it, you know, media, be it development. So definitely a huge accomplishment. Is there an industry retirement that you think would kind of like move you on a deeper level at all? Like I always think about like Miyamoto and like what that's going to be like and all that, but like is there anything like that that you have on your radar?
Yeah, I mean that was my immediate go-to. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask the Final Fantasy question back to you, because to answer your question, I'm not terribly familiar with like the Final Fantasy games. I've dabbled, but I'm not an expert. And so this guy Hashimoto, I don't like, is he a guy like that now that he's retired and is no longer contributing to the Square Enix universe of games, you know, Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts? Do you think that gamers would is that something you would notice going forward? Is it like, oh, some essential flavor is gone now that guy's not there anymore? Do you know what I mean? Is that a thing that's likely to happen?
I don't think so, because of the role it is. Like I imagine that's a much more like team centered role, and I think the fact that they've been doing the transition for the last year probably has primed things to like, you know, be a little bit less noticeable. I think it also depends on like, if fans had, and again, I'm not a Final Fantasy person, so people in the chat or in your wrong can mention what, you know, Hashimoto's meant to like you and your fandom. But I think a lot of times because that is so behind the scenes, like it wouldn't be as generally perceived by mainstream fans. But, you know, that one I'm not really sure because I don't know any specifics on like, oh, yeah, like Hashimoto led this specific campaign or something like that where it'd be like perceived by like the common fan.
But you said it. Miyamoto's the one, right? I think that if I mean, I think he's already kind of halfway there, right? He said before that it's he's like kind of stepping back now in ways. But like, if he were to say like I'm officially retired, or God forbid, although you'll probably like this, Janet, if he were to die, right? Like
don't even joke about that. That would be a
genuine. Like, I think we would all like that. Would be a genuine, very serious moment of mourning, right, in the game industry. That would be terrible. I don't even like thinking about it. I want to get off this topic. It's horrible. But like Miyamoto is someone who is so like one of the, like, I think the word genius gets thrown around too much, but Miyamoto is an absolute genuine bona fide, mm-hmm. a true genius, right? And I don't think Nintendo would be half the company it is today were it not for his creative contributions over the years. And don't forget, it's not just like the games that he's, you know, been like directly involved in making, like Mario and Zelda. It's like he puts his hands in everything, right? He'll mm-hmm. even if he just like comes and shows up for a day and says, why don't you do it more like this and more like that, his creative influences fell all over the kind of the Nintendo universe and everything that they do. And when he steps back, and when his influence is no longer felt anymore, I think, you know, I the closest analogy I think is like when Steve Jobs died, right? Like Apple, you know, like Steve Jobs was so closely associated and so directly responsible for the things that made Apple the company that is today. Like, oh, here's the iPod, here's the iPhone, here are these amazing things that literally no one else would have done, would have thought of and made it exactly the way that they were. That after he passed, Apple is still a tremendously successful company in the same way that I think Nintendo will go on to be a tremendously successful company. But like, there's not been a holy shit, Apple did what moment since Steve Jobs died, because he was the guy that came up with those things. And Tim Cook, I think, has done a very good job leading the gun. The watch and all these things have been very good, and the company's shed loads of money. But when was the last time Apple like blew your socks off with something that they announced the way they did when Steve Jobs was there? I think it will be a similar thing when Nintendo has the legacy that Miyamoto will leave is like that creative legacy will always be kind of, you know, will be kind of in the bones of Nintendo as a company, and his genius and his influence will be felt long after he's gone. But if he's not there doing it day to day anymore, I do think that, again, in that case, I think something essential will be lost. And I don't even want to think what like a post, you know how much I love Nintendo. I think it's one of the truly indispensable, I think it's the one truly indispensable company in the games business. Without them, the games industry is just less special. And I think without Miyamoto, Nintendo is less special. And so I don't even want to think about it. God, Jack, why are we talking about death and people,
all, you,
the end of things? It's so depressing.
It's funny because people are like, they're like, oh, it's that's so retirement, such a morbid thought. I'm like, what is morbid about retirement? Like that's on your own terms. Like y'all are the ones that went to like the death level. Like,
Gary, you ever think about the end? You know,
you got a plan, you know? I will say, like, you know, before we move on, for Miyamoto, yeah, obviously, like, I am also, like, a huge Nintendo fan. And I actually told this story on MinMax the other day because someone wrote in asking about, like, oh, what is your ideal for, like, creators that you admire, like, seeing them retire? Like, would you want to see, like, you know, an event? Like, how would you want it announced? Like, we were kind of having that conversation, you know, Miyamoto and his work came up. And I'm like, yeah, literally, I was watching, I was doing some, you know, looking up on old games because I was like writing on a thing on the Super Mario 3D Land. So I'm like, okay, let me refresh myself on like how this game was marketed and like kind of conversation around this game. And they had like on the Nintendo site, like on the game page, like a little video interview with Miyamoto talking about the design of the game and just hearing him talk about it and like how also knowing that that's such a brilliant, one of the best Mario games in my opinion is Mario 3D Land. And like, I got emotional just hearing about it because I don't know. It's just, it's wild to not only have a product and a piece of art that you really admire, but to kind of get the additional insights and like know who like was involved in the creative like genius that kind of went into it. And yeah, like, you know, really moving stuff. But again, congrats to Hashimoto. You know, may like all these creators like find their timing to like kind of do their retirement and carve the path in their career that they want to carve, whether that's just, you know, going off into the sunset, whether that's doing other content afterwards. You know, hopefully people find satisfaction and joy in those endeavors. So congrats to him. Onto lighter stuff. I promise this will be lighter. Okay.
I guarantee you we'll be back on death and decay in like 5 minutes. Let's see how we do.
It's just games coming to Game Pass now. Warning, I am going to mention the games that are leaving Game Pass as well. So
no!
I don't know if that's too much for you. But look, the information's out there. Okay, June 1st, we have For Honor. June 2nd, we have Ninja Gaiden Master Collection. June 7th, we have Assassin's Creed Origins, Chorus, Disc Room, Space Lines from the Far Out. Quick interjection, I'm still hearing Barrett yell no in my head.
Barrett, do you have some kind of like bell tolling sound effect that we could put over this? I feel like it would be very appropriate right now.
Oh my God. I really, you know, this isn't the legacy I wanted to make for myself today, but you know, you don't get to pick what you're famous for, is also what I would say.
Vic Rattler in the chat asks, where do games go when they leave Game Pass? I don't know.
Oh my God.
They go to a lovely farm where they get to play with all the other games that have left Game Pass.
Yay! You get discounts on them if they leave Game Pass, if you have Game Pass. Okay, DLC updates. We have Age of Empires 3 Definitive Edition and Knights of the Mediterranean DLC available now. Microsoft Flight Simulator Top Gun Maverick expansion available now. That Top Gun's getting a lot of hype. So I feel like if you're someone that was playing Microsoft Flight Simulator, that might be one worth hitting up. No Man's Sky Leviathan Expedition is available now, and Sea of Thieves Lost Sands Adventure available until June 9th. Again, I didn't do this for the memes, but I did want to tell you what's leaving Game Pass. Darkest Dungeon, Dungeons and Dragons Dark Alliance, Greenfall and Limbo, as well as Worms Rumble. So if you're currently playing in those games or you want to play in those games, go play them now before they go off to where the games go when they leave Game Pass. But yeah, any of those notable, whether arrivals or ones leaving, like anything from here that you're going to pick up? Are you a Game Pass person, Gary?
I was looking at it kind of from an unbiased point of view. That looks like a good chunk of new games coming. It's just that none of them personally felt like they were for me. Like there's nothing here for me, but I think there's a lot for other people. I think there's a lot of good stuff here. Don't forget the other thing you can do with Game Pass, if let's say you're like halfway through a game and you realize, oh, it's going to go away, but I want to keep playing it. You have the other nice thing about Game Pass is you have the option to buy it at like a discounted rate. So you can just like say, well, I want to own this one. If it's a game you really care about and you can see yourself continuing to play it and you don't want it to go away, you know, that's the nice thing about the warnings. Like this thing's going away. So, you know, either finish it now and move on to the next game, or you can purchase it and don't have to worry about it leaving Game Pass. So they do give you the option.
Yeah, or chaotically start it and try to beat it. I mean, Limbo is really short. You could probably beat that pretty quickly. I would love, let me know if anyone does this content already, but I would love like a Twitch or YouTube channel that was like just things leaving Game Pass and they just try to like get through as much content as possible once you know that it's on its way out. I will say too, occasionally things come back to Game Pass. Obviously, I think, yeah, if you're playing it and you want to finish it, just go ahead and buy it. But that happened with me with Outer Wilds, I think it was. It was on Game Pass, then it wasn't, so I just bought it, like, I think I just bought it on PlayStation. And then it came back, like, while I was playing it. I was like, well, you know, hey, I already have it now. So that's the, you know, the, I was going to say the best way to have games, but with online stuff, that might not even be true. I don't know. It all is what it is. That did get morbid. See, now it's in my head. Now it's in my head. You know, now it's like it's all caught up. Let's talk about something a little bit more cheery. The Pokemon Company has had a record financial year. This comes from Ed Nightingale over at Eurogamer, who writes, the Pokemon Company has seen a record financial year, according to industry analyst Dr. Serkan Toto. Filing in the Japanese government's official gazette shows sales were up over 70% from the previous year to 204 billion yen, while operating profits was at 59 billion yen, which is U.S. 460 million. And net profit rose 123% to 41 billion yen, a.k.a. 320 million. Of course, that's down to some huge game releases over the fiscal year, including Pokemon Legends Arceus, Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, Pokemon Unite, and new Pokemon Snap. That's on top of Pokemon Go, the trading card game, and the usual assortment of merchandise. Pokemon Legends Arceus sales were particularly impressive, selling 6.5 million copies in its first week. And then, of course, later this year, we will get Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which will undoubtedly provide another huge boost in sales. Gary, are you a Pokemon person? And then do you think that we're going to continue to see this aggressive of a release calendar from Pokemon? Because I feel like, and again, you know, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, if you have additional examples, I feel like this is one of the most aggressive windows of Pokemon that we've been in, especially in terms of like console or, you know, game releases, because obviously, you know, you could argue like the movies and things like that being a bit of a boom. But yeah, what do you think? What do you make of this?
I've tried to play Pokemon games over the years. I never got into them, but I have a 9-year-old kid, so I'm a Pokemon fan by extension. She actually, not as much as she used to be, but for like for the last couple of years, she was really, really into it. I got to this, she watches, she loves the anime cartoons. She loves the video games. She's kind of into the cards, but not, you know, like the physical cards, but not that much. But like, I'm at a point now where, you know, in the mainline kind of Pokemon anime show, when they have that thing in the middle, who's that Pokemon? And they show you the silhouette. I can nine times out of 10, I could identify.
That's pretty impressive.
Not because I have any interest myself, but just because I've been exposed to it so much that I've just learned this stuff, whether I want to learn it or not.
There's a good cheat to it too. It's usually just Pikachu.
Oh, there's what's the cheat?
It's usually just Pikachu. Yeah, that's the secret.
I guess that's always a guess you could make. This is actually the opposite of what we've been talking. We're talking about like death and decay and entropy and everything's gonna die. Pokemon feels like the one kind of. I'm trying to think of another one. It's the one immortal brand, right? Like it's hard to imagine even 50 or 100 years, Pokemon, I think, will still be around in some form. Like, I can't ever imagine a time when it would fall out of fashion and people don't want it. Don't you think? Like, it just seems it's going to be around forever.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the biggest powerhouses. Like, the only other stuff, and again, and that's why, like, Nintendo kind of has, like, that icon status, not just the longevity, but also, I think, what they've done with franchises. But even, like, Mario, I feel like, isn't as quite as powerful in the sense that, like, Pokemon's really cut across all medium in a really good way that, like, you know, we are starting to see more of that. You're definitely seeing a lot of video game IP go, like, the TV show or the movie route. But, like, Pokemon's been doing that. It's been out here for ages. You know, I remember being a kid having, like, the Pokemon movie VHS, you know, whatever the movie was where he tried to punch Mewtwo, which I have no idea why he thought he could square up with a Pokemon, like, just, but that's pretty much the plot of Pokemon Arceus, so I don't know, they brought it all back. But yeah, there's just so much content everywhere. The first movie, okay, but what is it called? Just Pokemon 2000?
There's
Pokemon
so many of them. My kid watches all these. She watches the Sun and Moon movie. And there's so many different shows,
just but, the Pokemon movie. Yeah, let me know.
The first movie is literally what it's got. Pokemon,
I'm actually
movie.
Very newbie when it comes to like the business
that's
of the Pokemon
so infuriating.
Universe. Did Pokemon start as video games or did it start as cards? And what now is the bigger, because this is the thing, it's not just video games, right? The collectible cards and people who just play the Pokemon card game, that's huge as well, just aside from video games. And then there's the whole industry of the so many different anime shows and animated films and now live action films. There are all these different extensions of it. But like, what's considered like the centerpiece of the Pokemon? It's the video games, right? The cards.
Chad is saying it started with the games in 96.
Right. But yeah, the cards have gone on to become their own massive, massive entity, right? Yeah. There's a massive collectible market for the cards.
Yeah, literally everywhere you go, there's Pokemon. There's, you know, you got anywhere you turn. You got the shows, you got the movies, you got the cards, you got the games, you have the apps. You know, I'm still waiting for, what is it, Pokemon Sleep to drop, that sleep app? I haven't slept in years since hearing about that announcement.
Does sound
just
good.
Been waiting.
My kid has a toothbrushing app called Pokemon Smile.
Pokemon Smile, yep. Yeah,
yeah, and when you brush your teeth, you unlock Pokemon. It's genius.
Yeah, and you can get little like filters and stuff. I haven't used it since it came out because I really just downloaded it to be like, let's, you know, it's like Nintendo. Well, again, I know people are like, it's Pokemon made by Nintendo, but it's a Pokemon company. But y'all know it's whatever. It's on Nintendo platforms. So I remember downloading and playing that. It's pretty cute and useful. So yeah, I mean, I have no qualms with that. I think it was a great product. But yeah, no sleep till Pokemon Sleep. Yeah, you know, Nano in the chat mentioned, like, this wasn't as aggressive of a year considering there weren't as many, like, small spinoffs. But I guess when I, like, say aggressive, I feel like there was a lot of, like, mainline or remake stuff. And then especially to have Pokemon Scarlet and Violet announced to drop in the same year as Legends Arceus, which is mainline, according to the company, it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff.
What platform was the first Pokemon game released on?
Game Boy.
Was it a Game Boy game, the very first one?
Yeah. Pokemon Red and Blue.
Red and Blue. So that was where it all started. Yeah. Was with Pokemon Red and Blue. Okay. What do you got there? You got something? You got Pokemon Red?
I got Pokemon Red.
Look at you. Original Game Boy cart.
I tried playing
this. It's Red and Green. Sorry.
Red and Green. Okay.
Chet is going to be really mad at me. But yeah, it was Red and Green and then Blue and then Yellow a couple of years later.
So that would have been what? 90s? I'm guessing.
Yeah, 96 was. Okay. When it all started.
Oh, I guess I don't have Pokemon Yellow. I thought I had Pokemon Yellow because I had a yellow cartridge by the Pokemon games, but nope, that was just Donkey Kong Land, which is also game, but not a Pokemon game. But yeah, and I got the Detective, from when I saw Detective Pikachu, the little cards. Yeah, no, Pokemon's insane. Are you kind of just, you know, done with the Pokemon attempts and entry points? I do feel like
a lot of this was dictated by my kid. My kid, for a couple of years, was really, really into Pokemon. She played all the games. She watched all, she really loved the anime TV shows. I can't even tell you how many times I've heard that fucking opening theme tune to Pokemon Sun and Moon on Netflix. It's a very catchy tune.
Can
but
you
it does
sing
get
it for
old.
Us right now?
Oh, I can't remember how it goes.
You just said, you're like, I can't get it out of my head. Now
I just remember then, under the Alolan moon, Pokemon. That was like the very end part of it. But it is a very catchy, because, you know, it's all set, you know, Alola is like the kind of Hawaiian part of the Pokemon universe. So it's always very kind of sun splashed and very pretty and tropical. And it's like, there's a lot of fun happening over there in that corner of the Pokemon universe. But like, my kid was into a couple of years and that she just kind of, I don't want to say aged out, because there's like 40-year-old dudes that are into Pokemon, right? But like she's moved on to other things. She was really into the games and really into the shows for a while, and she collected the cards for a little bit as well. She used to have this amazing, and she still has it, this really cool, it's a toy, it's like a Pokeball, and you click on it and it asks you questions like, is your Pokemon Yellow, or does your Pokemon have a tail, or can your Pokemon
that.
Evolve,
like,
or whatever, and it will guess it.
But you play it with like a little device. Yes, that thing is cool.
It's kind of like the app on what's the name of the app on the web thing that can like guess anything that you're thinking of, like guess any celebrity. What's the name of that? He's like a genie. Forget the name of the guy. Anyway,
in chat, tell us the genie app.
The genie app that will like guess you answer it, like you answer like a bunch
Akinator
of yes or no questions.
Is what chat's
saying?
Akinator,
that's what it is. Yes. Well, it's basically a Pokemon Akinator, but it has a voice. It goes, hi, I'm going to guess to think of a Pokemon. I'm going to ask you questions about Pokemon, and it will always get it. It's actually really cool.
That's awesome. Speaking of things that are really cool, I want to remind y'all that you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. I love MeUndies from head to toe, all over my body. If you don't believe me, of course, right now, I'm wearing the MeUndies shirt. You can tell by the little tag going on right there, right? I got the MeUndies lounge shorts going on. Of course, I got the undies. And then, boom, MeUndies socks, baby. That's how we do out here at Kinda Funny. I love being soft head to toe in the micromodal fabric. You already know all about that. But if you don't, let's face it, summer's sweaty, but your butt doesn't have to be. With MeUndies light and breathable micromodal fabric, you can stay comfy and cool all summer long. They have super fun seasonal prints and tons of styles to choose from. But if you just like classic black, that's totally cool too. They got a bunch of just bold colors for you to go for. They have super fun seasonal prints, tons of styles, and sizes extra small to 4XL. So you can bring the beach to your butt without ever leaving your living room. MeUndies has a great offer for all of you first-time purchasers. You can get 15% off if you sign up for their free to join membership. You can apply that 15% off to their already discounted membership prices. To get 15% off your first order and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. Tell them Tim Getty sent you. Shout out to Chime for sponsoring this episode. No one likes waiting on a paycheck, especially when you've got bills due. Good thing there's Chime. Now you can get your paycheck up to 2 days early without direct deposit. That's up to 2 more days to save, pay bills, and generally just feel good about your money situation. But Chime is about more than just getting paid early. It's also an award-winning mobile app, checking account, debit card, and optional savings account. What are you waiting for? Hopefully not your paycheck. Get started with Chime today. Applying for a free account takes less than 2 minutes. Get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank NA. Members FDIC. Early access to direct deposit funds depends on payer. Get started at chime.com/kfgames. Shout out to Credit Karma for sponsoring this episode. Want a new credit card but not sure how to choose? You don't need to apply for the first offer that you see in the mail. Credit Karma can help you zero in on the right option for you and apply with more confidence. I love Credit Karma. I've been using it for years to check my credit profile, make sure everything is good and on the up and up. Credit Karma uses your credit profile to show you offers that are tailored to your financial situation. Credit Karma partners with a wide range of card issuers, so you can be sure that you're exploring all sorts of options. Best of all, Credit Karma uses your credit data to show you your chances of approval before you even apply, helping you apply with more confidence. Comparing cards on Credit Karma is 100% free and most importantly, will not affect your credit score. That is huge. Credit Karma, create your own karma. Ready to find the right card for you? Head to Credit Karma and check out your personalized mix of offers today. That's creditkarma.com or hit up the Credit Karma app to find the right card for you. That's creditkarma.com.
Now let's talk about Nintendo shutting its Pokemon Diamond and Pearl sound library down. Again, I'm just the bringer of death here. This comes from Ed Nightingale.
Just say, congratulations. We just talked about how Pokemon's immortal and Janet's managed to find the one part of the Pokemon universe that's dying.
I know, but you know, sound and music with Nintendo and anything associated with Nintendo is always going to be kind of dicey. But the article reads as follows. Nintendo is shutting down the Pokemon Diamond Pearl sound library mere months after it became available. The sound library comprises music and sound effects from the 2006 DS games Pokemon Diamond and Pearl, launched back in February. However, an announcement on the library page states it will shut down on the 31st of May. No data will be available to stream or download after this date. So at the time reading this, it's gone now. If you've already downloaded the content, it can still be used per the rather stringent terms and conditions. The library had music and sounds divided into various playlists, though none of it could be used for commercial use, of course. Here's the full announcement. Thank you for visiting the Pokemon Diamond Pearl Sound Library. We'll be shutting down the service on May 31st, 2022 at 9 a.m. UTC. You will not be able to stream or download the sound after that date. As for the sound data you've already downloaded, you will be able to continue to use it within the scope of terms, use, and guidelines, which you can, still access on the site. Please make sure to follow the latest terms of use and guidelines when using the sound data. We would like to take this opportunity to thank everyone who has supported us since service launch. It's unclear why it is closing, but consider this your last chance, or at least again, at the time of writing, to have downloaded it. Gary, what do you make of this? And will there ever be like an era where we'll have like nice access to any sounds and music associated with Nintendo? Because again, I don't want to say that Nintendo made Pokemon because that's not true. But this is kind of pretty common. You know, there's been a bunch of like strike downs of different things. Like, are we ever going to get to the point where we just can just open Spotify or something and like hear an album?
I mean, so far as this Pokemon thing is concerned, was this an official thing that Nintendo provided? And okay, they've just decided that for whatever reason, it was not worth their time anymore.
Yeah, like I think it was during that kind of like window of Pokemon Diamond Pearl, like probably like when the remakes dropped, I imagine. It's like, yeah, they often do these different like celebrations and like extra content or extra songs they like release. But yeah, I don't know why they like dropped it and then got rid of it. Maybe it just wasn't worth keeping up, like in terms of the servers or something.
Well, I mean, what was the use case for it? Like, what were people who were downloading these sounds? Again, you can't use them commercially. I imagine people couldn't put them on their streams or their YouTube videos or whatever. Yeah. So were people just listening to Pokemon sound effects for as a leisure activity?
So I think, okay, let's think of non-commercial uses. Alarm clocks.
Okay. Ringtones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Text tones. You know, like a rainy afternoon, you just listen to some Pokemon sounds and songs to add to the ambiance. That's pretty much the extent of everything. Yeah, people might. Just because people put them on their content, though, Chad, doesn't mean that you're necessarily allowed to put them on content. I mean, I see stuff on Twitch all the time with people using like a lot of those sounds are not approved, but most don't care except for when people do. So that's always how that kind of lands.
And Nintendo's really litigious as well. So I'd be really concerned if I was using like a Pokemon sound effect on my stream, you know, you'd worry that somebody might find you.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, it's a bummer for people that used it, but I think, I imagine that they didn't see a lot, you know, coming from it if they did shut down this early. But again, I think more than anything, like the whole reason I even, you know, bring this up is something that I want to toss in here is just, it just speaks to kind of the ongoing, like, struggles of finding ways to like make music and video game music accessible, especially any video game music that has any association with Nintendo. I don't know. It's something that I hope to see done better in the future. A lot of these solutions also oftentimes are weird. Like this was kind of a weird solution. Or I think about the, was it Smash that lets you like listen to like all the stage songs like in a separate player, but it's like on your Switch. So I'm like, well,
Mario Odyssey does that as well. There's like a player in the game, but like it's still like in the game. You can't like export it or anything.
Well, I do think that the Mario, the soundtrack for Odyssey is available on services. I could be wrong about that though.
Yeah, I mean, I have all the Super Mario Galaxy soundtrack on my phone, which I think like I got from like iTunes or whatever, like a legit source. It's weird because although I can't imagine, it was obviously kind of a niche thing, like Pokemon Sound Library, but it kind of, I mean, how much could it really cost them to keep that going? Like
they're like, we're gonna hit these.
And there's like some like very very strict, you know, kind of budget guy went through this and we're like this is costing us like $80 a month to run these servers. Why are we doing this? We could be saving that money.
You need that person in your budget though, I think. More than anything, maybe they were seeing also like issues with people not using them like under the proper terms and like rather than like fight everybody on this, it just makes more sense to end it. I imagine that'd probably be the more likely one, but I don't know. We'll never really know the answer to it. Only they know why that ended.
Like the story just for the fact that it has played into this kind of this narrative that has kind of emerged throughout the course of the show, which is like, well, okay, well, here's one thing that will never die, right? Pokemon. And Janet's like, wrong, I have found one part of it that is going to die. Bong.
Yes. Yeah. We need like the sad bell or something. This one isn't like a death thing. If anything, it's something that's going to happen, but just like later. A delay is not a death, right? It's different. Okay. eFootball will not get Master League mode until 2023. Will be paid DLC. This comes from Ryan Dinsdale over at IGN, who writes, Konami's eFootball won't be getting PES's beloved Master League mode until 2023, and fans will have to pay for it. eFootball's official Twitter account revealed its plans for the game going forward, including a breakdown of what's free and what isn't, and detailing what's coming this summer, winter, and then next year. The only content listed for 2023 so far is Master League, a mode that fans were already surprised to see missing from the game's launch, but it's not the only content that will cost players money. Quote, the number of teams that can be used in leagues and clubs will be expanded and distributed as additional paid content by the end of 2022, the tweet said. Also on the schedule is the lobby match mode that lets players create rooms online and play matches with their dream teams, which is expected this summer as a free update. Cross-platform support across consoles and PC will be available later this winter, as well as some editing features, though the tweet didn't explain what those would be. eFootball's Twitter said these updates were in response to fan feedback, meaning they're likely not the only new features coming to the game between now and next year. Konami has already announced that version 1.1 1.1.0, which is available on June 2nd, will improve the win/loss decision-making in online matches, enhance server capacity, and set the foundation for compatibility between the console and new mobile versions of eFootball. The 1.00 update to eFootball that marked its official launch was the development team's attempt to regain the trust of players after a pretty disastrous pre-release version launched in October that IGN said was awful. The official release didn't improve a lot, however, as in our 4 out of 10 review, IGN said, quote, yes, at least eFootball 2022 does now have a fully fledged mode to take it past the point of being a demo, but it's still lacking so much that you'd expect from a 1.0 version of a game. Gary, react.
I mean, I find this all very interesting. You know, the football video game market is obviously a huge, huge global business, right? FIFA, one of the most successful video game properties on the planet. And for the longest time, the shape of like the football game, you know, scene on you know, on consoles and what have you, used to be very simple. It was FIFA on one side and Pro Evo, Pro Evolution Soccer on the other. And some people preferred FIFA and some people really preferred Pro Evo. Pro Evo fans were like really rabid about the fact that they thought they had the better game. And it really was, you know, you tried both and you played whichever one you thought was better. But they were both very good in their own rights. And then Konami made this bizarre decision to get rid of Pro Evo. Is like everyone knows Pro Evo, right? It's not as well known as FIFA, but people know it. They killed that brand, came up with this thing called eFootball, this free-to-play game, which, as you rightly mentioned, had this absolutely catastrophic launch. Like it birthed 1,000 memes, right? You know, these awful, hideous versions of, you know, Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo running around, you know, looking like they're saying, please just kill me, because they're just so horribly, grotesquely deformed and they don't look anything like it. There's so many jokes and it was so glitchy and it was just so bad. And everyone was like, what have you done? Like Pro Evo was this thing that you had that was good and you replaced it with this? Just a big mess. So I've been really, really interested to see as they move forward. I think they said like 1.10 now, like if they are able to get it on a stable footing, if they can actually make it good in the way that Pro Evo used to be good. They, like you said, they have a lot of trust to regain, because that the state that the eFootball has been in has been like literally laughable. Like it has just been a laughing stock. At the same time, the FIFA license is going away. Who knows where the FIFA license may? FIFA is obviously going to do some deal. Maybe 2K gets it. Maybe it goes somewhere else. I don't know. You know, then you've got EA Sports FC coming along. The EA's successor to FIFA. The whole like football games market, I think, over the next few years is going to become very different and perhaps more varied and interesting than it has been, where it was just like the FIFA Pro Evo duopoly. But no, as someone who never even really played.
Mario Strikers coming in, but no,
I'm just kidding. Right. Well, I'm excited about that though. Genuinely excited about Super Mario Strikers. But no, it's going to be interesting, because I think I feel bad for people who are fans of Pro Evo, because they had a game they looked forward to every year and it got taken away from them and replaced with this absolute mess, this atrocity. And I can only hope that Konami are committed to, you know, like I said, regaining trust and getting it to a place where it is a worthy successor to Pro Evo. Because right now it's anything but.
Yeah. Have you checked out eFootball at all?
Which one?
eFootball.
Oh, no. I mean, only in terms of the memes and the, I mean, like, why would I have FIFA on my console? That's a very good football game. Why? You know, the only reason to look at eFootball is like, oh my God, like what joke meme has come out of it this week? Because that's really all it has been since they launched it.
Yeah, I also haven't touched it yet for similar reasons. My brother, that like I mostly play FIFA now, soon to be EA Sports FC, with my brother, and like he tried out eFootball a little bit. I think like around that kind of launch window, and was like, yeah, like it's really rough. And then even when it's not, like there's just a lot of weird decisions of like, and maybe part of this is remnants of you know, its origins and like the franchise it was before it became eFootball, but just like the mapping, just kind of everything just feeling a little bit off, you know, than what I think he's used to as like a FIFA player. So yeah, I mean, I think it is disappointing to hear that the launch has been so rough, because I think there's so much potential in having a free-to-play soccer game like this, if done well. But it seems like that has been a struggle. And it also seems like, you know, with elements being kind of, you know, locked off by like you have to pay for it, which I think is totally fair, because, you know, you have to find a way to like monetize and make money off of like this free to play content. But it seems like it's going to be a rough go, I think, to get this thing to have the legs that it needs to be competitive in a market that is like so dominated by the established players. eFootball being a competitor is so far away. If I want to know what is coming to mom and grab shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software on each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Bong. You know, I really didn't intend to be a meme, but you know, it's Tuesday.
Listen, you don't. No one ever intends to create a meme. They just happen.
You know, out today, SnowRunner on PS5 and Xbox Series X/S. These are like those next-gen upgrades. Insomnus releases today on PlayStation 5. Some new dates for y'all, and I apologize, these are very out of order in terms of how time works, but Destroy All Humans 2 Reprobed is launching on August 30th. Star Wars Jedi Survivor coming 2023. Of course, that dropped, you know, late on Friday.
We will have a trailer breakdown and a theory video of Star Wars Jedi Survivor later today, by the way.
Yep. Thanks for the shout out on that. So look forward to that later. Monument Valley coming. The series is coming to PC in July. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords comes to Nintendo Switch on June 8th, 2022. Grindstone comes out on Steam June 23rd. So Grindstone's already on PC.
Hell yeah.
But it was such just on Epic Games Store. It is so good. I absolutely love Grindstone. I wish there was a way to just buy it on mobile. I know you can have it on Apple Arcade, but like, you know,
that's how I got hooked on it, was through Apple Arcade. So fun.
It's the best place to play it. I mean, I'm sure like it plays well everywhere, but like I love that game. That game is so good. Speaking of Apple Arcade, also tossed in here, Frogger and the Rumbling Ruins from Konami is launching on June 3rd. Cooking Mama Cuisine launching on June 17th, and Air Twister launching on June 24th. We got World of Mechs launching on June 2nd on Quest 2. Ninja Gaiden Master Collection, of course, heading to Xbox and PC, as mentioned before. And Intruder in Antiquania coming to Steam on July 8th, 2022. It's always scary when you read the stuff that like, oh, someone tossed this in here. And I'm like, I hope this is all right, because I'm just reading down the list. Let's go ahead and jump to You're Wrong before we close out. And we'll do some reader mail in the post show. Doing a quick glance.
I don't get things wrong, Janet. You've not hosted me before, so you may not know that, but I don't get anything wrong. So this is always usually a dead segment.
There is a new Sonic Frontiers trailer out.
Yeah.
We can cover that tomorrow, you know.
Yeah. With part of
Is that the open world game?
Yeah.
It's open-esque. It's a Kirby maybe. Forgotten Land or bigger. We don't know. We'll find out later, maybe, if that's in the coverage. I assume that'd be in there in IGN first coverage, hopefully.
We watched the Sonic 2 movie again over the weekend. What a banger. What a great movie.
We still haven't watched it. I'm really excited. Oh, it's so good. Alyssa really loved the first one. So
if you have Paramount Plus, it's on that. That's what we watched over the weekend.
That sounds like a commitment, you know.
But yeah, it's a lot of stuff already covered. And then a suggestion that you put your Twitch clips on TikTok. So, again, a lot of ways to make that content.
Yeah.
Next up for hosts, we have tomorrow me and Greg. Thursday, we have Bless and Tim. And Friday, we have Bless and Imran. If you're watching live, again, after this is KFW. And if you want to catch that stream later, make sure you're subscribed to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. This has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. We're each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We're a Patreon post show for those who are subbed to the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that time. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.